This is Scenic Roots live in the library. Until the library reopens, we're going to be sharing some shows recorded in other venues every week. This afternoon, we have the first for us of a series of shows recorded in the Parlor Room in Northampton, Massachusetts. All of these shows, which have been going on for a while, feature artists whose music has been marketed by Signature Sounds, a label run by Jim Olsen and his partner Mark Thayer for 25 years. In fact, all of these shows are a celebration of their anniversary this year. This afternoon, we have a set from singer and songwriter Erin McKeown, recorded as are all the shows in the Parlor Room in Northampton. This was recorded the day after the presidential inauguration. Jim Olsen is the host.
How you doing, Erin?
I'm really good. This is a big adventure out.
Yeah, indeed, right? Well, the journey of Signature Sounds and Erin McKeown are intertwined back a little more than 20 years ago. You put out a fantastic album called Distillation, which was kind of your proper debut album. It remains one of my favorite albums we've ever released on the label.
That means a lot. What a list. What a list.
It was really just an incredible album, and the fact that it was a debut album, it was such a incredibly sort of confident and just musically literate debut. Mm. It came out at a time when you were kind of part of the greater New England folk scene, singer-songwriter scene, and it came out at a time when so many people were coming up and making great music, a lot of folks from the label, but it sort of stood apart, I felt, a little bit, Distillation, in that it wasn't your standard singer-songwriter record. It wasn't a confessional, personal point of view album, both musically and lyrically, was something a little bit different.
That's probably the hashtag for my career. Something a little bit different, not the standard singer-songwriter album. I don't know why it was that way. I don't know how I came to sound that way or why the record became that way, but it just did. Who brought it to you?
Like, Gabe Unger started chasing me around. Who's your manager
at the time?
Yep. It was an interesting period for Signature Sounds because to that point, to the year 2000, we'd pretty much been just a local record label serving Western Mass, a little bit in New England. You were kind of our first new artist breakout. An artist that went a little further. The Distillation was a really successful project that got picked up by the press and
really was,
you know, both nationally and internationally. And that had never really happened for us before. For a long while, it was the best-selling album we ever had on the label.
For a long time for me as well. Absolutely. Do you know why I picked Signature Sounds? Have I ever told you this?
No.
When I was in high school, I grew up about an hour and a half from Washington, D.C., and in 1996, the Folk Alliance was in D.C., and a group of singer-songwriters, for whatever reason, got a gig down in my small town. So it was these four singer-songwriters came down from Folk Alliance to do an In the Round in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and it was Martin Sexton and Chuck Brodsky, Greg Greenway, and Louise Taylor. Uh-huh. And I went to that show that night and fell in love with Louise Taylor and bought Ruby Shoes and wore it out and looked on the back. I was just learning what a label was, mm-hmm, and what it would do, and it's a Signature Sounds. And so then when Gabe said, there's a record label interested in your music called Signature Sounds, I was like, oh my God, it's Louise Taylor's. I have to be on the same record label as Louise Taylor. Because she was just one of the first singer-songwriters I ever saw. I didn't even know that that was a thing you could be, mm-hmm, until that night when I saw four of some of our best. And then I was like, well, if that's her home, then that makes sense for me.
And it makes sense kind of musically, too. I feel like you and Louise share guitar styles that mm-hmm are kind of getting out from the mainstream. You know, different kinds of chord progressions and different rhythmic stuff. And it's very cool. It's nice to see. But
that's great.
Going back to Distillation for a minute, it was recorded in Amherst. You and Dave Chalfant made that record together. How did you and Dave connect?
We connected through Ben Demrath, who's another amazing Valley musician. Ben and Dave were friends, and Ben Demrath had gone to summer camp with Gabe Unger, my manager at the time. And so Gabe was, you know, just becoming a manager himself, so he was bothering you, and he was bothering Ben Demrath, and he was bothering all these people about this new artist, me, that he had. And so he gave Ben a tape, and Ben gave it to Dave Chalfant. And then not long after that, the Neilds came to Brown University, where I was a student, to play. And I opened for them there. And that's where I met Dave that night, and he'd already had the cassette. And I think in that conversation, we said, let's make a record together. So I would come out here on weekends and basically sleep in the control room, which was just an extra bedroom at their house in Amherst. And that's how we made the record, a little bit at a time over weekends, which is really how you should make a record, honestly. Like, you shouldn't pay a bunch of money and go someplace for a week and have to get it all done. Like, if you can work in a comfortable space on your own time when you feel like it, I think you get a more relaxed and a more true record.
One of the things that's amazing about Distillation is the amount of joy that clearly is in that record. You guys were having such a good time. You hear little hoops and hollers in the background and stuff, and you left all that stuff in. You didn't take any of it out. And it just adds to this this sort of freewheeling, improvisational feeling about the record, that you guys were winging it, but you were just such on the same page. And, you know, it just makes for magic.
It's hard to know that you'll find a collaborator like that ever, but it's also better if it's the first thing you ever do, because you don't know what you don't have or what you could have. And so to find Dave and to have that, I mean, all of those hoops and hollers and all that stuff is I mean, some of that comes from like my tradition of like where I grew up and the kind of music that I made growing up, like you just express in that way. But that is what happened. That is what it was. You know, it was literally the two of us just laughing in his house with the, you know, recording thing running. So we left all of it in because it was what the record should be. And you know, it's like in the subsequent years, I've probably tried to manufacture that feeling again. It's never quite the same. And the same thing of trying to find that with a collaborator. I have yet to find that symmetry with another audio collaborator like that.
Well, let's get to some live music.
Yes.
Aaron McCown here, live from the Parlor Room.
I thought it would be fun to try to play a few songs from Distillation, since we're talking about it. It's dumb to have resolutions in 2021, because who knows? I think we've learned. But one of my resolutions was to stop playing old songs, to really like try to play new songs. And I think the songs from Distillation are the only ones that I will break the rule with. I'm certainly in this situation because we're talking about it. But this is the song that opens that record. And I wrote it about my intercourse habits when I was 19. I'm a kind of lover who won't run for cover. What kind of lover am I? Come on, baby, I'm loving lazy. What kind of lover am I? Put my bed above us, then I'll learn to love us. What kind of lover am I? I'm a little drinker, I'm nervous and a stinker. What kind of lover am I? Ooh, a little rule breaker, how do I break so well? Oh, a little rule breaker, if you break me, can you tell the world? Yeah, we'll magic heart forever for art. What kind of lover am I? I don't say and I'm plying. I'm the queen of quiet. What kind of lover am I? Ooh, I am a little rule breaker. How do I break so well? Oh, a little rule breaker. If you break me, can you tell? Now I'm the kind of lover who won't run for cover. What kind of lover am I? I'm the kind of lover who won't run for cover. What kind of lover am I? Kind of lover. Now what kind of lover am I? Kind of lover. Everybody cheer at home. This is also what it's like in the pandemic, is we play songs to the void, but we trust. Tonight woke I in a strange bed. Strange bedfellow, strange. Tonight found I in a strange bed. Strange bedfellow, strange. Said to me, oh, you'll be all right. Said to me, oh, you'll be all right. In a strange bed, in a strange bed, bedfellow strange. Said to me what they've always said. Said to me what I've always heard. You're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, girl. You're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, girl. A girl you sleep with success. Girl you sleep with success. Tonight. Now I said, slept I haven't. Beds, oh, of middle America. Life off the fat of the man. Well, now I'm gonna go out tonight. I'm all try to make it. Live I as fast as I can. Well, then I said to its success. I didn't recognize you at first. But then I set to its success. You don't look the way I have dreamed of you. I have dreamed of you. Well, not strange, said success, to find me here tonight. Well, not strange, said success, said what say you to a bargain twixt you and I, success in life. And success, it said to me, forget about the beds of middle America. You don't need the fat of the man. So why don't you sleep with me tonight? It's all you've got to do to make it and die as fast as we can. And die as fast we as can. Success, I couldn't love you if I tried. Well, then I said to it, success, I couldn't love you if I tried. And I tried, and I tried, and I tried. Something about a success that lies. Something about success that lies. Lies next to me, strange bed, strange bed, bedfellow strange. Thanks a lot, everybody. Everybody watching along at home tonight, it's so beautiful what they have happening here in the parlor room. There's all these cameras and really great sound, and everything is here except you. Someday we'll be here again. So those are two songs from Distillation, and then now we'll move on to the 21st century, and this is a song that I wrote. I've been in this songwriting group for a bunch of years, where we get a prompt on Sundays, and we have to use that prompt in a song, and the song is due Friday night at midnight. And in that group, it's led by Matt the Electrician. Chris Delmhorst has been in it for years. Natalia Zuckerman, Devin Sproul, Anna Tivol, all these, Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket. We've all been in this group for many, many years now, and it's such a great accountability process, you know. So you write, you know, you write whatever you write, and you got to turn it in. And sometimes it's really, and other times it's okay, and then you can make it better. And every once in a while, you get a good one right out of the chute. But the point is to just keep making them. So this next few songs I'm going to play are all songs from we call the group The Game. So these are all songs from The Game, and I'll tell you what the prompt is, and then you can, then you can listen for it in the song. So this one, the prompt was At the Wilderness, which you get that, and you're like, how am I going to use that in a song? You cannot cage me, I revolt. You cannot contain me, I bolt. I'm not caught because what I got you can't hold. At the beginning, at the wilderness, the wildness was obvious. From the moment you saw me, you should have known. In the dirty snow, holding my own. You cannot cage me, I revolt. You cannot contain me, I bolt. I'm not caught because what I got you can't hold. I wouldn't dare me, so don't. You cannot will me, I won't. I'm not caught because what I got you can't hold. Pinching an audience, this naughtiness is glorious. You love me because of this wildness, this tenderness. With every bite of my teeth, I'm showing you best how I love you back without bitterness. You cannot cage me, I revolt. You cannot contain me, I bolt. I'm not caught because what I got you can't hold. I wouldn't dare me, so don't. You cannot will me, I won't. I'm not caught because what I got you can't hold. Thank you so much. So At the Wilderness, you heard that one at the beginning. I'll play you another song from The Game now. This one, the prompt was On the Seafloor, and it came in the second or third week of March, maybe early April, when we were just starting to get a picture of like what this pandemic, the pando, I like to call it, what the pando would be like. And so I decided to fit the prompt On the Seafloor to the pandemic. Meet me on the seafloor, far below the waves and tide. We will kiss our orifices, away from viruses, Fly with me to outer space, beyond the reach of pathogens. I will twine your tentacles in mine and feed you hydrochloroquine. Love in the time of corona, love in the midst of it all. Is this what it means to be human, to reach for love even as we fall? In the time of corona, love in the midst of it all. The escape hatch is already open. Close your eyes and imagine the fall. Come with me into a dream. Jettison your mask and gloves. We will be free from the necessary PPE. The protection of a fantasy provides a certain kind of royalty, grants a moment of serenity, bestows a little bit of safety on the salty floor of the sea. All right, one more song from the game. This one, gosh, what was the... The prompt for this one was elevator repair guy, which was just like, what do you do with that? Elevator repair guy. You know, the thing with the prompt is like, it doesn't have to be the title. It doesn't have to be the first line. You can kind of tuck it in anywhere. You can even kind of rag the line. So like if it's elevator repair guy, you could end a line with repair and start the next line with guy, or end it with elevator and then repair guy. So people can get really creative about it. But I just started thinking about, like, you know, all the elevator repair guys I know, which is no one. And I thought, well, where are they all? Imagine the elevator repair guy for heaven. Picture how very busy he must be. All the politics, well, not to mention the pressure to get everyone where they're supposed to be. I hope the people in line are very patient. I'm sure that guy is doing the best he can. I bet some days are better than others. I bet some days it's a living hell. I can't really whistle, but I'll try. The elevator repair guy for heaven. Picture how very busy he must be. All the politics, well, not to mention the pressure of being God's VIP.
On Scenic Roots, our guest is Aaron McKeown, recorded in a virtual show from the Parlor Room in Northampton, Massachusetts. And the host for the show, Jim Olson.
We are live at the Parlor Room in Northampton with Aaron McKeown, playing some songs from the game.
Playing songs from the game. I bet 25 to 30% of your catalog is from the game.
It is just
some way or another.
Such a great concept. Now, you said you get the prompt on Sunday. You have to finish the song by Friday.
Friday midnight.
Is this like a Zoom thing? Do you guys all get Zoom?
It's old fashioned. It's an email chain. I mean, you basically just write an email to the group and attach your song. And if you're feeling frisky, you might title your voice memo. If you're really feeling frisky, you might actually write out the lyrics. But it's really like, you know, by midnight you get 10 or 15 voicemail one, whatever it is, like unnamed voice memos, like just sitting in your inbox. I mean, it's brilliant for like a creative practice, right? Because it just doesn't matter. I mean, obviously you want your peers and you don't want to seem a fool like to your peers, but on the other hand, like your peers are also struggling, so everyone's sending in something ridiculous, and every once in a while, like I said, like a real gem will come out, and it's just so fun to hear everybody's process and to hear how everybody handles the same kernel of a starting point, and everyone's work processes are different too. Like usually, if I have enough time, I'll put it into Logic and I'll make like a whole full demo with like drums and bass and all this, because that makes me happy. And there's other people who it's always just guitar and vocal voice memo at like 11:50, you know. And not that I haven't done that myself too, but many of us in the group, then we might have a pile of like 25 or 30 songs, and then you go back and you find the 15 that you like. And then you go to those 15 and you see if you can make 12 of them better. There are whole albums from it. And then you end up listening to your friends' albums and you hear it. Like Chris Delmore's, for example, like, you know, longtime member of the game. And several of her last records I'll be listening in then, or I'll come see her here at the Parlor Room and she'll be singing a song. And I'm like, I have one of those. I have an At the Wilderness song. Yeah.
Have any of your songs made it onto your albums?
All of them. I mean, all my last albums.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I made a pair of EPs in 2016 and 2017 that were, each of those, 5 out of the 6 songs were from the game. And then I wrote a 6th song for each one to tie it all together. And then my newest record is probably, there's 13 songs on it. I bet 9 or 10 of them are from the game. And, wow. And that's all from this year. I started writing that record in March and wrote the whole thing. In the pandemic.
That is so great. It encourages risk. It encourages work.
It really does.
At a time when you might be otherwise not feeling it.
No, and I tell this to my students all the time, and it helps me do it as well. But I tell them songs are not precious. I'm like, if you ever learn anything from me as a teacher, I want you to learn that songs are not precious. And as an artist, that seems counterintuitive, right? Because you spend all this time making these little jewels that mean so much to you. But if you understand that they aren't precious and that you'll make many of them in your life and some will be better than others and none should go up on the mantle, you can keep making things. I think the worst thing is to get real excited about something and then you get stuck. So to try not to care a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. Secretly we all care a lot, but to try not to care, and something like the game really helps you just keep moving.
That's awesome. I was going to say, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you've never tried to reproduce distillation. And one of the things I love about your career is you've never tried to duplicate any other album. All your albums are super unique and different.
I know.
And that's wonderful.
Do you think that?
I do think that.
You do think that. I have been on the fence about that for years, but I don't seem to be able to do anything else. You know, whenever I have at different times tried to make the same record again, or to even to stay within one genre for some perhaps mistaken idea about ease of marketing or what people should expect.
Who were your first influences when you started getting into music?
Oh, that's a good, well, Louise Taylor, that's for one. Martin Sexton. They both really changed my life that night. Mm-hmm. I grew up in this like small southern town, and so the music that I grew up playing with my friends and listening to was, I mean, certainly the Beatles, but also like the Allman Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd and Stevie Ray Vaughan. You know, it was a real like Southern rock blues guitar scene that I came up in. So that music.
And it wasn't
Bill Kirchen, who I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bill Kirchen, when I was in high school, he again like just came and played Fredericksburg, and I'd never seen someone play a Telecaster the way he does, and big influence on me.
Diesel Billy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I didn't know, you know, it was amazing. So that's where I came from. And I also grew up going to a summer camp where every night after we had it was a science camp, but every night we would get out the songbooks and sing. And so that was all like Woody Guthrie, Paul Simon, Indigo Girls, you know, that's sort of like that folk protest tradition. And so that was in there for me. And then, you know, and then because I'm from Virginia and I'm 43, Dave Matthews was like the biggest things since like sliced bread.
Right.
You know, you'd be in high school and you would drive to Charlottesville or Richmond to see him play. And, you know, his guitar playing is a huge influence on mine. And no one ever spots it because I think because I'm a woman and he's, you know, a man. And so you don't look at those cross things. But everything I learned on the guitar was a complete ripoff of Dave Matthews from, you know, circa mid-90s.
Did you have a great teacher or a musical mentor?
I had two. Who are quite disparate. And I know you'll know one of them as a long time like roots music supporter. There was a blues band, a kind of a Piedmont blues band called Sapphire, the Uppity Blues Women, mm-hmm. who were led by, it was three women, and they were founded and led by Gay Dagbalola, who was a science teacher at my high school.
Oh, wow.
And she started writing blues songs, and she comes from a tradition of civil rights protests, and her family had been in Fredericksburg for years and had just been leading all that. She came out of that movement and used Piedmont blues, which is, you know, from the part of Virginia I'm from, to tell these stories about women. And some of them quite raunchy, you know, and so she was a real mentor to me because I knew her as like a science teacher. And then she kind of had this, they had quite a big career, like internationally, yeah. and winning awards and stuff. And they were from this little town, and she really took me under her wing when she saw that I was interested in being a singer-songwriter. So I would get to go play open for them when they play in Virginia. You know, she really taught me a lot just as a, she was always using music as a way to make social change. But she was also like, those songs are funny, you know, they're almost a comedy act, some of those songs. And so mm-hmm. I learned a lot from her. And then my other big mentor was the guy in the basement at the guitar store who taught me lessons.
Uh-huh.
Like no one ever would ever know who he is. But I took guitar lessons in seventh and eighth grade. He really recognized that I'm grateful. He recognized that I had a big mind for the guitar. And so he didn't wait for me to get good at one thing or another. He just gave it all to me. So he would give me this one scale this week, and whether I had mastered it or not, he would give me the next scale the next week. And so I still have books and books of things that he gave me that are still revealing themselves. Because he just sort of gave me the whole thing of you know, he was a jazz guitar fingerstyle player in an Americana like world. And so he just gave me all that stuff. And, you know, for years and years, I would still be finding new things in that. So that guy and Ms. Dagbalola.
And what I love is that you now, 20 years into your career, you're a teacher,
yeah.
and a mentor. You've gone back to your alma mater, Brown University. You're teaching a course there.
Yeah, I'm teaching students about how to make musical theater, which is something I never thought that I would be doing. But we have a good time because you know, especially in the pandemic, musical theater is everywhere. It's definitely not on stage right now, but we're seeing all these movies and podcasts and TV shows and even just these online worlds that are musicals that people are making. So I try to help my students do that.
Nice. And you, of course, did that yourself with...
I did. Who would have thought that?
Yeah. Yeah. Miss You Like Hell.
Which
debuted in 2018 at the Public Theater in New York. Huge achievement.
It is, actually. I think maybe I can say that now a few years later. That took up most of the 2010s for me.
Did it sort of derail your other career?
Yes.
In a good way? You know, was that a good thing?
Hard to say. I mean, Miss You Like Hell challenged me as a writer. Mm-hmm. I had to become a better writer. I had to become a better rewriter. That's what it is. Because I think in the world that you and I, you know, mostly live in, it's, and I think this is 90% good, it's like we just do the thing and then we move on. It's like you walk up to the stairs of the stage, you say to someone, do you want to sing on Knocking on Heaven's Door? And they say, okay. And then you go on stage and you do it. And it's a similar thing with when you're on shows with friends or people in your band or like sitting around the campfire, you just like make the music and move on. And similar with the writing, I think, you know, as you mentioned, what singer-songwriter music is, it's a very immediate, like, here's how I feel in this moment, I'm going to just write it. And then I'm going to write 20 more of them. And a musical theater just needs you to pause and then go back and go back and go back and keep rewriting things. So I had to really learn how to do that. And it also, it kind of, so that was good. I think I'm a better writer for having done a project like that and having it to lead an organization. Do you know what I mean? As the orchestrator and the composer of
sure.
a off-Broadway musical that took 8 years, you know, I had to I had to learn how to be a leader and in a certain way, and how to sort of run a little mini company of people. But it also, you know, writing for, when you're writing for the theater, you can't just play four bars of guitar because it feels good, right? Because nothing's happening. And everyone's going to start looking around being like, wait, what? So you can't have a long intro. You can't like really have a guitar solo. You can't stop and break down the rhythm unless you're going to have a dance number. And if you didn't write a musical with dancing, which I didn't, you can't do that. So that was counterintuitive. And once I learned how to do that, I kind of had to relearn. And that's what this last couple of years, especially the pandemic, has been for me, has been like relearning how to just write a song for the sake of writing a song, where I don't have to worry about a character. It's okay if I don't understand exactly what I'm trying to say. If I kind of understand what I'm trying to say, or if it feels good, it's okay.
Yeah. Good thing you have the game.
I know. Well, the game is the perfect thing for that, right? Because yeah. It's like, no one is looking at my songs for the game and saying like, what are the actors doing in this moment? What's the lighting cue? Like, rewrite that string part. None of that. It's just, what do you do with this weird phrase that someone handed you? And then you get to hear all your wonderful peers, like what they do with that weird phrase. And we've done a couple shows in the pandemic. I mean, part of it, what's been great is, you know, these kind of online things, it's made it really easy to like in the round and collaborate and stuff. So I've done a bunch of online in the rounds with people from the game where we just play this, we just trade them, you know, we say, okay, here's the prompt. If you've got one, you've got one. And we trade them. And it's really fun to just see them all next to each other because they're completely different.
Yeah. That's awesome. So great. One other thing I wanted to mention is, Aaron, you're a pioneer in another way. You've been doing the live stream thing way before everything shut down.
Since 1909.
Your Cabin Fever series.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. Great content on your website. You got them all up there.
Thank you. Yeah.
And yeah.
If nothing, and you'll appreciate this, celebrating the 25th anniversary signature, but I am an archivist. Like, it's really important to me to make series and have them all visible. So the first Cabin Fever happened in 2009, and you can still watch it. It doesn't look that great. It doesn't sound that great. But it was a thunderstorm in my living room, and I had Sonia Kitchell and Chris Delmorse and Jonah Smith come over. And you know, at that time we used it the way people use Kickstarter to raise money to make a new record. And it was all donation-based, and that's why I started doing them, was to give people a kind of house concert that they could pay for but didn't have to be in the house with me.
Yeah. Well, you're the inventor of the live stream. It's simple as that.
Why, thank you. No, but I will have to say that the technology has really, it's so great how easy it is now. Because yeah. It was not, in 2009, it was not easy to find enough bandwidth, to find a platform that people could watch it on. Streaming video was tough, and watching streaming video was tough. And like, how do you get people to like donate? What does a ticket mean? Like, all yep. of that stuff, it was really hard, and it's still hard, but we have all these amazing tools now that are helping. And certainly in the Pando, like, there have been even better tools have come, which, you know, I hope, I don't know what you think is going to happen afterwards, but I do think some of the things that we've started doing in the pandemic in terms of like accessibility and collaboration and stuff, I hope stays. I mean, it would be great if the Parlor Room always live streamed.
We've been talking about it, about, you know, the idea of doing like a hybrid live performance, live stream.
I mean, yeah, for years. I mean, there was already people who couldn't go to shows mm-hmm. for all kinds of reasons. But for years after this Pando, I'm sure it's going to be a while till everybody who wants to can still come to a show. And
we've all developed a certain mindset, you know. Cramming into a room with a bunch of other people is just not high on the priority list.
It really isn't. I mean, as someone who, how many thousands of shows have you put on and how many have I played? It is interesting to take that away and see what's left.
Yeah. And what it's going to look like when it comes back. It's all a mystery.
Well, all I know, not to be too sentimental, but is that I want Signature Sounds to be there, and I'm so grateful that I've had this time to be part of your empire that you've built.
We will definitely do this again with
okay,
people.
Good.
No doubt. Aaron McCown here today at the Parlor Room. It's part of our 25th anniversary live stream. Want to get back to music?
Yeah. So as I was mentioning to Jim, I did write a whole album in the pandemic, and I hope it will come out in late 2021. You know, it's just been a relief to not have to be on the road, to be totally honest. And it's been a great, like, boon for my creativity to make stuff and not have to imagine that people will hear it. I mean, obviously now I'm letting people hear it. But so I have this whole pile of songs that I've now turned into this record. And so I'll finish here with a little mini set of all brand new stuff. And it's always been a theme of my music over the years. I've considered myself as much a poet as anything else. And I just don't put that on my bio because it feels pretentious to say I'm a poet. But for example, as we saw yesterday at the inauguration, like what power poetry has in these incredible moments. And it was so beautiful to see Amanda Gorman just come up yesterday at the inauguration and just bless us with the English language through her lens as a young woman of color. And it's been something that's been important to me for a while as far as being a poet. And I just mostly think of poems as songs without music, and then I feel fine about making them. So I'm gonna start with this as a song without music. I wish I had it memorized for you. I don't. Landing Spot was the prompt. This is from the game. And it's also from my new record. Like an astronaut, blinded by 100-watt sun, I went for the cheap shot. I done gone, went, and forgot. Trying to be something I'm not, and hold up, I lost the plot. You see, I was floating on that moonshot, drawing on that beauty spot every night because I thought that I ought. Surprise, it ain't diddly squat. Just left me bloodshot in a parking lot, alone and out of earshot, the kettle calling the pot what? Only silence, tongue tied up in knots. And then in that dry rot, I heard the flash of a dash and a dot. An SOS, yes, singing back to me from a previous Camelot. Come home, astronaut. Now it's not blue, it's cobalt. It's not beige, it's apricot. When I'm so cool, I'm white hot. I write to a beat and a bass and an emotional snapshot. The work is to learn to want what I've got. So here I come down to earth. Here I am, I know what I'm worth. I'm a jackpot. This here is my landing spot. All of the songs on the new record are about, they're all about an intimate relationship that happened in a very short amount of time. And I thought it'd be really fun to see how many songs I could write about something that didn't take very much time. So this one is Details of the Crime. I never look for love, I invite it still. Breaking my locks, doing its dirt at will. So when you came for me, you were the big surprise. Over my shoulder, out of the corner of my eyes. Now we dance a slow pantomime, a duet of regret, details of the crime. You were a fragrant wind, blow through my dusty vaults. Seasons of sex, leaving a smell of salt. Summer fades to the winter time, still a sweat of regret, details of the crime. Ripped from the pages of some cheap detective novels, or from a mini-series mystery of the week. A trail of evidence so evidently obvious, how dare we speak? I know myself, I know my modus operandi. I'll solve the case before the caper becomes clear. Who is a victim of my many misdemeanors? I volunteer. Beyond logic, no internal rhyme. What we will forget of the threat, details of the crime. Ha ha ha. Ah. Ah. Details of the crime. I never look for love, but I invite it still. Open my locks, do with me what you will. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Details of the crime.
This is the first time I'm playing these songs standing up. All of my performances in the Pando have been sitting down, either on my couch or in the studio. So it's a little interesting to like stand up and play. This used to be what I would do all the time, and now it hardly ever happens. So it's tiring, I think. Here's another new one. The idea originally behind the record was to collaborate with my favorite songwriters. I had started in 2019 with this idea. Oh, I'm just going to go visit my favorite songwriters and we're going to all write from the same prompt. So a little bit of the idea of the game, but with different writers across the album. And then the pandemic happened and it made going to visit my favorite songwriters not practical. So I let that go and then moved on to this idea of like, what if I wrote as many songs as possible about, you know, one very small incident. And I did have one song that kind of migrated from one version of the project to the next, and it's a song that I wrote with another Signature Sounds artist, another one of the, I think, the great pillars of Jim's work here, which is Laurie McKenna. And Laurie and I were friends in the Boston scene years and years ago, of course, and we had the same first manager, and who I think is probably how she came to Signature Sounds as well, was through that pathway. And, you know, Laurie has, of course, gone on to extraordinary fame as a superb and well-regarded Nashville singer-songwriter. But she still answers texts from her friend, old friend Aaron. And so before the pandemic, I went to her house in Eastern Mass, and we wrote this song, and it works for this new record project as well. I guess I've gotten on off hard. I'm in for good or I give up. Until you get a space or a kiss, you don't know which one you're with. My heart is like a line in the sand. You're never landing on the middle of it. It's either gonna sink or swim. It's either gonna feel everything or feel nothing. Nothing when it hears your name. When it's gone, you'll never get it back again. It's gonna stop or start my on-off heart. I'm head over heels or not. I'm freezing cold or paradise hot. It's either I believe or I don't. I'm all in, or I feel nothing. Nothing when I hear your name. I'm gone, you'll never get me back again. It's gonna stop or start my on-off heart. The thing about an off heart, it thinks it's so alone. Don't like a small talk, needs a lightning strike to hit it right, to make it turn back on. I guess I've gotten on off hard. When I said I loved you, it was racing hard. And when I said I'm leaving, that was the space between the beating. On Off Heart with my friend Laurie McKenna. These are all songs from this new record written during the pando and coming out, I hope, in the fall. We'll find out. What does that even mean? It means who knows what time is in the pandemic. I'd like to do another song without music, otherwise known as a poem. I grew up Catholic. So those of you that grew up Catholic will certainly be familiar with a litany. And if we were here in the parlor room and all the people were here with us, I would have you in the room be doing the responsorial. But instead, let's just imagine you at home doing the responsorial for this. The way it goes is that I'm going to say, Lord, hear our prayer. And then somewhere out in the world across the internet, you're going to respond, Lord, hear our prayer. Now, you can say that ironically if you want. You can just say that because I said it. You can supplant like Lord something else. You can say Biden, hear our prayer. You can say Kamala, hear our prayer. Whatever you like. But a litany, the litany for the minor character is what this is called. For you who never lied to me, for you who began with buyer beware to me, Lord, hear our prayer. For you, my conspirator, you who you only knew me by my nom de guerre, call me by my secret cares, Lord, hear our prayer. For the pair of us, walking, arms twist tight, seaside nights in that gay town square. For you who broke my heart before I was aware, I swear. But there you were so rare with your blue eyes and blonde hair, Lord, hear our prayer. For before second best was too much to bear, rearranging deck chairs on that sinking bedstead, thinking, for when I was finally awake, did I dare, Lord, hear our prayer. For the blankness of your stare, for how I couldn't get beneath some layer, it scared me shitless that I could care this much, Lord, hear our prayer. For all that millionaire solitaire, laissez-faire, this high price of repair, for all the writers hoofed me, thinking they'd write something, they'd get lucky, for me, the first to strike, now does it feel fair, Lord, hear our prayer. For the world is a wheel, for the wheel is a world, a wheel in the world, in the middle of the air, Lord, hear our prayer. For all this mess, this blessing, will you grant us? For all this struggle, all this, for someone so brief, a narrator, mercy for that minor character. Lord, I send this prayer. Lord, I send this prayer. Lord, hear our prayer. For these poems that I'm doing tonight without music, just to let people know, there is music that goes with them, but I can't quite make that music while it happens at the same time. So in another world, there will be a time where you can hear the music that goes underneath these poems. I'm going to do one more song for you, one more new thing, and I just have to think of which one of them I need to practice the most, because this is the last time I will be playing for a while. I don't have anything else on my calendar for the future, until perhaps in the fall. We'll see how things go with the pandemic. I think in honor of what this room does, usually I'll end with this one. It's called The Business of Show. And I just want to thank everybody for listening and everybody here at Signature Sounds. I mean, I don't even know how you say thank you for 25 years, but it's incredible. And we as a community are so lucky. We are so lucky that we have Signature Sounds here. So thank you. I did it all for the business of show, hair and makeup. You were the blonde in the front of the row, lips all played up. Under a spell that night, of a spotlight glare on me. Yeah. Every line from my lip, every note from my hand was for you only. No other sound since singing began felt so holy. The heat of your eyes on me was all I needed to fly. Ooh, 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 ooh. Show will kill me, I know, but I go on anyway. Without this source, I am out of sorts, divorced and far away. After the set in the lobby, I spied your leather jacket. I rushed through the crowd to the end of the line just so I could grab it. Our wires touched, cheeks went blush, heartbeats rushing with desire, with desire, with desire. We do it all for the glitter and shine, those magic moments, the gift and the curse of the business of show. There's no difference.
Erin McKeown in the Parlor Room in Northampton, Massachusetts. If you'd like to watch it as well as listen to it, the video is on the Signature Sounds website. Next Friday on Scenic Roots, our guest will be Elin Jewell. This is listener-supported public radio from Chattanooga, WUTC.